big nuclear time bombs. Holy overeating. Holy roller coasters.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time for the Lion Sidekick Podcast.
Hey, heroes. This is Tom Pounder, and you are listening to the YM Sidekick Podcast. This is where ministers come to get some cool tips and tricks and ideas on how to do ministry more effectively in a very digital and online world. And today I'm really excited because I have Stan Rada back on the podcast, and we're going to be talking about events. Now, let's just be honest. I mean, events are something that is really important and really vital to your ministry, but how you do them and what you use them for and how you mobilize your team of volunteers and the team of people in your ministry is really important. And Stan's gotten really purposeful and strategic and really focuses on disciple making in his event strategy this year. And so we're going to look at an event that he has coming up, and we're going to look at what he's done in the past and how he's changed his focus this year to make it more strategic and purposeful to help more relationships develop and grow out of it. It becomes less dependent on him as the main leader and more dependent on other people. It's fantastic. It's really cool. So I'm really excited about this interview. So without any further ado, let's get in the conversation right now with Stan Rada. All right. With me right now is my friend Stan Rada.
What's up, Tom?
Stan, I don't get to do a lot of these live face-to-face conversations anymore, and so this is kind of nice that I get to do this with you.
Well, it's because I'm so popular, I don't have time for you anymore.
Oh, gosh. Jeez, okay, thanks.
We were actually having this conversation briefly before you hit record, and I was joking around with you.
But. Yes, that's good. No, you are very popular, though.
No, I'm not, Tom.
And you're blogging again, and you're blogging, sending emails again.
Blogging and sending emails again, yeah, getting back to some of that.
And then maybe eventually podcasting?
Maybe. I haven't decided. My time is weird right now, and my season of life with a kid in high school and two in middle school, I'm just at a weird place, and time flies, man.
That changes everything, doesn't it?
Changes it a lot.
It changes.
Scrambling the one to work because he can't drive yet, but then, yeah, it's weird. I type when I can.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you can type easier, I think, than podcast. So
It's easier to type it out real quick than it is to set up the the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Well, Stan, it's always great to have you on. I'm glad it's always nice to have you on.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, you did a blog post recently that I got a chance to read that I really, really, really liked. And, you know, again, because you and I work together, I get to hear these thoughts about this stuff before they actually come out on paper
or on
blogs.
Sometimes that's true. Yeah.
Yes. I've been hearing your passion behind this. So let's get into the kind of the blog post a little bit. You wrote about events and doing church events, especially specifically church-wide events. And they could be actually any kind of a church event. It could be a student ministry event or a family ministry or just a church-wide event. So in your experience, how have you seen these operated in the past? Give me some ideas of what are the strategy behind those things.
I guess what I see the most in kind of church events is less, to be honest, for those who have the same background as I do, it's actually less about strategy, and it's more typically about, oh, we've always done that.
Yeah.
My background in a church previous to New Life, so almost 10 years ago now, I remember we used to invent holidays. When I got on staff there, they wanted me to host a Thanksgiving Eve service. And I'm like, who's going to come to Thanksgiving Eve? Everybody's kind of going home to be with family. But I think a lot of times what it is less about, I mean, in my experience, a lot of churches just do stuff just because they always have. Somewhere along the way, some tradition popped up, and maybe there was good intent and good motive behind it. But an event popped up, somebody put it together, the preacher's wife, the children's minister, somebody put it together, the church decided they liked it, and then instead of it becoming strategic, over time it shifts and just becomes, this is what we've always done, and then 30, 50, 100 years go by, and you're always doing this very outdated or you know, ineffective event just because you always have. And I mean, there's some churches that do well with some strategy behind events, but for the most part, what I see in church events is just, we always do this because we always have. And that's part of my, I guess that was part of the thinking behind me writing what I wrote and thinking about some of the stuff I was thinking through.
Yeah, well, exactly. And again, we'll take, for example, this Fall Fun Fest that is something that a lot of churches, I think, would do pretty regularly, a Fall Fun Fest. We've done one as well. And again, I think when you talk about strategy, too, I think you mentioned in your blog post, you know, the hope is then, hey, we're going to do this event, and I hope that they'll come to church, you know, next Sunday or maybe a following Sunday, that there is a hope there and not a real strategy. Can you kind of talk into that a little bit?
I think the hard part of putting together an event sometimes can be the really strategic aspect of, no, we are creating this event for a specific intentional purpose that will drive people to this one specific intentional thing, to then, like, that is harder to create than it is to just say, again, we've always had this one type of event, we're just going to keep doing it because it seemed to work and some people show up, and we're just going to keep doing that hoping somebody will show up. Hope sounds really nice because it's Bible language, right? We hope in Jesus. We hope for, you know, friends to come. Like, hope is so nice and flowery and it sounds wonderful. The problem with hope is it's not a strategy. There's no, that's not a strategy to actually pull off the successful event. So hope is also, is not a strategy. And the other purpose behind what your event should not be is, should not just simply be for fun, let's say. Again, kind of the same deal. We weren't called for fun events. And so the idea behind being more strategic with it, I guess, is I don't want to hope somebody shows up. I don't want it just to be fun. I want to actually think through why in the world I'm doing this. So,
and again, to use your own event as a backdrop here, you've done the Fall Fun Fest. How many years?
Well, so yeah, I've been on staff for coming up on 9 years. So we've done some version of a Fall Fun Fest for 9 years. And to be fair, I think we have tried to be really strategic with the Fall Fun Fest. I would say over those years, I've gotten better at leading through those events. So the first couple of Fall Fun Fests were not very good. You know, if we had 300 people, it was, you know, a big deal, you know, like, wow, we had 300 people at an event. And then last year we had 2,500 people. We ran out of hot dogs and food, and we had to make extra runs to BJ's for, you know, food and supplies. And so that's gotten bigger and better, and it's kind of flourishing. But yeah, in order for that event to continue being effective and useful in our calendar, it is going to have to get much more strategic outside of just spend a whole bunch of money, put together this nice thing, and again, just hope somebody shows up. Hope that they like it enough that they want to show up on a Sunday and see who we are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And again, and you're all about fun. Just to clarify, make sure, you're all about doing events, you're all about doing fun, just so that someone is not mishearing you. There is a real strategy of doing some fun things, but it has to be a little bit more intentional. What I've seen over with your event over the past years and what you're communicating is that there's got to be a more intentional strategy. And so what does that look like for your event here? How have you made changes, in particular from last year where you had 2,500 people was even a step up from what you had the year before last year. And so now you're expecting 4,000 people. And you're planning for that. That's a huge turnout.
Yeah.
What are you doing differently to make that more of a strategic event to take them to that next step?
Okay. Let me back up and hit your last point too, real quick. If your event, if you're going to host any event, yes, probably to some degree it should be fun.
You don't
want to host a boring event. So, like, if you read the blog post, you'll see that there. You'll see that if you come to our event, it's fun. You will have fun, but the strategic purpose of it is not just fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So here's where we're at right now. We are kind of in the midst of a culture shift to some degree at New Life in regards to disciple making, our strategy for that, how we go about doing that. And so I'm at a place where everything that we do needs to revolve around how do we create the opportunities and environments where people can go and make disciples. They can start conversations and go and make disciples. And so what we did with Fall Fun Fest this year, for instance, I'll give you a backdrop from last year. Last year, you know, we have X amount, I forget what the budget total is. I don't know, it's like $10,000 or something for the event itself, for the whole thing, everything that we have to do with it. So we've got this money set aside. And normally what we've done is try to be almost overly cautious with everywhere we spend the money. And what we've typically done is say, let's plug in all the new lifers in all the various serving roles, partly because it saves us a little bit of money, but partly because it gives them a chance to serve. It gives them a chance to show up and be a part and have a hands-on ownership. And that's great. All of that is good. But what it was doing, I found anyway, at least at our event, other people maybe have found another way around this. At our events, it felt like people were more just engaged in the act of serving, but they weren't actively pursuing the conversation with people. I couldn't quite figure out how to get to that point where it was really strategic toward making disciples, starting conversations. Mm-hmm. And so what we did this year was we just shifted how we're going to do Fall Fun Fest. So we took roughly the same budget. And this year instead, I just said, you know what, let's actually spend a little bit more money on vendors than we normally would to bring people in to drive in their food truck or drive in the funnel cake truck or to drive in the moon bounce. Let them set those fun things up. Let them run them, manage them, lead them. And let's actually train up and prepare some sort of army, if you will, of new lifers who float through the whole event, who walk around, engage people waiting in line for the funnel cake, engage families waiting in line for the moon bounce, and train them actually how to have a simple conversation. Hey guys, my name's Joe. What's your name? Oh, that's great. Hey, how'd you hear about the event? And what brought you here today? And oh, what are your kids' names? Like, and train them how to begin to engage that conversation. Because what's going to happen is, I guess, technically, if you're riding on hope that somebody's going to show up the next day, it's really hard to connect that dot to Sunday, because if you've not had a conversation with anybody at the event, you're not necessarily sure if they actually did show up. So it's really hard to connect that dot. It's easier to connect that dot if I've got a volunteer, a team member, who says at the end of the event, I had a conversation with five families. One of those families lives in my neighborhood. I told them, hey, I'll look for you at the bus stop. Hey, I'll look for you at the local Starbucks. Oh, hey, I'll look for you over lunch. Hey, and I engaged them in a conversation and then was able to say, well, hey, if you guys are ever interested in being a part of some of what we do on, say, a Sunday, I'm here for the specific, I come to the 9:30 service. I'd love to have you guys come. I'll grab a cup of coffee with you, sit with you, show you around. Like making that conversation very, very strategic and intentional with the end goal of connecting that person in a relationship with this new person who may be a believer, maybe a nominal believer, maybe lost, you know, because we will have at our event, we will have people who do not know Jesus. And if I can connect disciple makers to those people, I can become very strategic about using the event as a, you know, fuel on the fire for making disciples. So it's not that we don't like events or that I don't like them. It's that I really want to be very strategic and intentional about why in the world I'm doing that particular event. So it's really just viewing it as, how can I get as many people to that event as possible, call it a fishing pond, and just let my disciple makers go crazy, you know, drop hooks, start conversations, and just try to get to people.
Yeah, and see, what I love about this is, again, events are great, and they're great. They're great for churches to utilize in the community.
Yes.
But then again, getting them to associate, they're like, "Hey, we've got this event, a New Life Christian Church put on this event. I'm going to go check out that church." Maybe that will happen.
Sure.
But, and hopefully that will happen. But the reality is, what we know to be true is that relationships matter. People desire community, and what you're setting your army of volunteers up for, not just is to serve as a moon bounce, making sure kids don't get hurt, or a hot dog vendor or whatnot, you're actually getting them to serve in a very intentional way. So then those people who are serving feel like they're actually doing something really productive and they're helping the church in a very productive way. But then it's also building a connection so that where someone who maybe not go to church, they may see your flyers and the package that you give them, you know, for yeah. attending the event. And they'll say, oh, New Life Christian Church. I met this one guy who's there.
Yeah.
And he invited me to come along. I might go check it out. He seemed like a pretty cool guy. So I think you're really setting up some real great community opportunities there.
Yeah. And I think churches would do well to examine the genuine motive of why they host an event. And like I said, my background is the motive was typically, well, we've always done it, or mm-hmm. that's just the way it's always been. And that is some people's experience. But to genuinely examine that, because just to speak, I guess, really honestly about the event, and especially an event that draws a lot of people from the view of the pastor, a lot of times what the event ends up becoming is almost an ego boost for the pastor, because look at this thing I've created. Look at all these people who showed up. Now, if I just can get some of those people to show up on Sunday, and then they'll come and talk to me about my church, and maybe I can get, and it's almost, I mean, if you really look at it, I mean, and I'll speak for myself, maybe no other pastor in the world, and whoever's listening to this, struggles with ego. Maybe I am the only one who wants big numbers and wants people to show up and whatnot. My guess is that's not true. But if we really examine that, I think a lot of times the put on the big event, be known in my community for, sometimes the ugly underside of that is I really want to be known. I need my ego stroked. Yeah. I need the affirmation of, look what I have done. Now, the reality is if I have an event that 4,000 people show up at, and if 4,000 people showed up at my church the next day, my campus would be so bottlenecked to me, it wouldn't even be funny. We would be so overwhelmed that even though my ego feels good about the number, it would fall apart.
Yeah.
And then I would not feel good on Tuesday morning. It would all fall apart. But the difference is, what happens if I've got 75 people roaming around, starting conversations, and who can actively take part in not bottlenecking people to me, but actually influence 75 people to go into the event and then go back out into their neighborhoods with these newfound relationships, and to engage those people in a disciple-making conversation, to get to know them over lunch, to get to know them over coffee. And now we're having a conversation about what God's doing in my life, what God's doing in the life of our church. And now suddenly I've multiplied, you know, quote, my ability to make disciples, because I've pushed that out to our people, and now multiplication can happen. Now something entirely different now happens. But if you view the event as a come and see us and we hope you show up, a lot of times what that translates to on Sunday is bottleneck them to me because I feel good about the numbers.
Yeah.
And I would encourage teams, pastors, staff, whoever, to really look at the motive behind the event. Why are we actually doing this? What does it actually produce? Or do we just continue doing this thing because it feels good or it's nice, but it's not actually having a result? And if our events long term are not producing some sort of kingdom impact, what ends up happening, I think, a lot of times is, number one, it's wasted resources and time. But number two, a lot of times the people who are your core get really jaded by the vision, because it's like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
What's the result? And so, yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts on that, but that's how I'm thinking about it these days.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's great. It really is a great thing. And again, it goes into the whole thing of follow-up, too. It's easier to follow-up because then someone, Joe, who met this family, is able to follow-up with them a little bit more effectively, rather than, again, just hoping that, hey, I hope this other family comes and visits. You have a real connection there.
Yep. And if they find that people came from their neighborhood and they either know them or want to get to know them, then what happens is a really cool conversation on Sunday gets to happen. Joe brings family A and introduces them to me and says, hey, they were at the event yesterday. I just wanted them to say hi to you. Oh, that's great. Very cool, Joe. Hey, thanks for coming, guys. Nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And then Joe's able to say, they live in my hood. We're going to go grab lunch tomorrow. Our kids know each other from the bus stop. And now all of a sudden it's like Joe gets to be really involved in the mission of what's up. He gets to be really, and now I don't need to worry about the follow-up of all of it, because now I'm just hearing stories of all these people who had all the conversations. So there's no follow up because I've got 75 people running around following up because
yeah.
they want to be a part of these people's lives. So, I mean, that culture may take some time to develop for us, but that is a way different way of, to me anyway, it's a significant shift in thinking about how and why we host certain events. I think it would make our calendars much more clear, much more strategic if we viewed them in light of how do we create these as fishing ponds for disciple making, not just, hey, let's host it because it's a nice thing and we've always done it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, no, I hear you. Well, this has been awesome. This is fantastic. Before I let you go, though, one question here is, you know, you talked about training up your team. What kind of training are you doing for them to prepare them for this fishing pond?
So right now I've got my kind of inner circle of people who I'm currently discipling. So I've got five guys and my assistant. So I've got six people who are really actively engaged right now with me in learning the art of gospel conversation, in learning how to abide in Christ on a daily basis, how to fall in love with the mission of Jesus and of God through the reading of Scripture. So as they are developing that, I am then teaching them how to go out and share that with other people. Jesus in Luke 10 calls them persons of peace. So the idea that what we're going to do with our training is I'm going to set that core up to know these simple principles of gospel conversation, of person of peace, how to have that, how to start that conversation, see if the person's open, all that stuff. And then as we get people who sign up to volunteer, I'm going to assign one of my five to say a group of 10 people. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to set them up with a little meeting over here, and I'm going to have my one guy train those 10. And then I've got five plus my assistant, so I've got six people. If I plug in six people to each, 10 people to each of them, that's 60 people mm-hmm. I can train in these conversations. And honestly, I'm just multiplying out my effort. I'm not creating work for myself. Yeah. I'm not adding to some workload. I'm not stressing myself out with meetings every evening. I'm actually filtering the disciple-making conversation through people, helping other people get on fire about it, but then training through the people who are already doing it with me.
Yeah.
And so I've been actively working on that with my group for 2 to 3 months now. And so they're gearing up to take people and run with them and drop hooks and fish, you know, when Fall Fun Fest rolls around.
See, and that's awesome because then you're, like you just said, you're investing in these few people who are then investing in other people who are then, and again, you're creating more buy-in to your church and your community without really bringing in a ton more work for you. You're discipling these core and then they're going and discipling other people and then hopefully multiplying. And that's fantastic. That's a great thing.
And that's just the training for Fall Fun Fest. But like some of the conversations I'm having with my guys behind the scenes are, you know, I've got this, I've got a guy at my work. He's Hindu. He's going through this and this. How do I reach him? And so we're having those conversations and they're developing those relationships. So I've got these people already kind of running on that. The idea of just connecting already believers to them to say, here's how you start a conversation with somebody is easy. All of them can now do it. They know what it looks like. They're practicing it now with baristas and waiters and waitresses, and they're already doing it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm multiplying that effort out from these six to 60 who are going to be able to hopefully have that. Again, it's new for us. It is going to be a culture shift because the event's going to look a little different because of this. But it may take a little bit of time, but that's how I'm trying to filter the event through the lens of disciple making, so that it connects to the mission of Jesus, not just doing an event just because it's nice or we feel good about ourselves and the community as a result.
Dude, this is awesome. I can't wait to hear how the event goes and what happens afterwards because
I know, me neither. I've set myself up for a really big, good. Really now, big drop on
Yeah, you're going to have
Monday.
Like, you're going to have 1,000 people come to your church the next day.
You know, I don't know, man.
Hey, well, before I let you go, let's find share again with how people can connect with you both on social media and on your blog.
Oh, yeah. So it's just my name on most of the social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all that stuff, at Stan Rotta on pretty much all those places. So my website, stanrotta.com, basically the primary focus of my website and resources have shifted primarily toward disciple-making, the disciple-making conversation, how to multiply disciples. So it's primarily shifted to that, but I still provide You know, ministry leader resources. I send out an email roughly weekly. I say periodic. I try to do it weekly now with upcoming blog posts or, you know, things that people may want to know about. So there's an email. You can get that from the website. Yeah, that's kind of what.
And you got stuff on your new thing, the writing pastors.
Oh, I was gonna say, I forgot about writing pastors. Yeah,
you don't forget about that. That you're into bike riding now, man, yeah. All these pastors.
Yeah, so the new thing I just got into, I got my motorcycle license back in May. Have been riding since. I love it. You know I love it. You see the pictures and all. Yeah,
every picture he posts.
It's a picture of my motorcycle. So what I did was I thought, oh, it'd be cool to start a riding pastors group and just try to connect pastors from around the country who actually ride motorcycles. And so I have a Facebook group. You can actually find out about it on the website, stanrotta.com. There's a page for it and then links to the Facebook group. You can go and so if you know a pastor who rides or if you are a pastor who rides, a ministry leader who rides, you can go be a part of the group. We just have some fun conversations. People post pictures of the last ride they took or some scenic view they had or you know, it's kind of getting started. It's a small group right now, but yeah, it's fun. So I'm trying to connect guys from around the country who do that and just see where they ride and what they're up to. And yeah, maybe I'll develop into something big someday. You never know.
That's good. I like it. The riding pastors.
Riding pastors.
All this will be on the show notes so you can get links to Stan's stuff. So Stan, as always, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, man. No problem.
All right, so there you have it. My conversation with Stan, and I really love what he's doing this year. Again, there's always been a hope, and I like how he said that. There's always been a hope that what kind of event you do carries over into a church and discipleship and disciple making. But Stan has gone from taking it as a hope and being really intentional and strategic about it and making sure that this event is awesome. It is going to be awesome. The event is awesome, but that people are there with the intention, the strategy of, hey, what kind of conversations can I have today that can lead us down a path of discipleship? What kind of relationships can I build and begin to develop today that will lead down to someone coming to know Jesus? It is fantastic. And again, it takes the pressure off of him and to do everything and to be responsible for everything and puts more of it on other people, and it mobilizes them and uses them for a real purpose and real ministry. So there's so much great stuff that can become of this. I'm really excited to see what will happen. I'll probably do a follow-up with him after the fact to see what developed because of this kind of strategy that they've had. All right, heroes. Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. So definitely hit me up on Twitter. If you've done something very similar to what Stan is doing, definitely share it with me on Twitter at TA Pounder. I would love to carry this conversation from here on to online so we can continue the conversation. It would be awesome. All right, as we wrap up, again, always, if you enjoyed the podcast, go to iTunes and subscribe to this. I've got new podcasts coming out every Wednesday. And so I'd love for you to subscribe to this and get this into your podcast catcher every week. Also, you can get this at ymsidekick.com. I've got my blogs there. I got some vlogs and my Twitter ebook up there as well. So you definitely want to check that out. All right, heroes. Well, I hope you have a great rest of the day, a great rest of the week. And until next time, have a great one.